Alright, this is the big deal. Because we're going to use this information and this understanding to take all of the more complicated statistical models apart and understand how they work. And we only have to understand how they work so that we understand how to write about the results. I'm not suddenly turning this into mathematical statistics on you. This is still driver's ed. Okay? We're still learning how to drive the car. Now what we're talking about is whether we have front-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive and what to do on ice. Okay? This formula is made up of two linear transformations. First, the multiplicative transformation. We multiply each person's x by the regression weight. And then an additive transformation, we add in the constant. Okay, so that's all that this formula is. And the more complicated formulas just have more of one and or the other. But it's just this. We got a multiplicative transform for the predictor and an additive transform for the model. Now, a good y prime will be a mimic of y. If all we wanted to know is whether they're related, correlation would be enough. We wouldn't need regression. If we wanted to know whether the direction of that relationship is positive or negative, we don't need a regression weight. All we need is a correlation. The reason we're running a regression weight is that we want an estimate of y. We want a y-like looking number for the y that we can't have. So if I'm predicting somebody's GPA, and you tell me 62.9, you're not helping. You with me? That 62.9 might be highly correlated with their GPA, but it doesn't mimic it. It's not really a prediction. I want something that looks like the criterion variable when I'm all done. That's what I mean by a mimic. This is accomplished by transforming x into y with the mean and the standard deviation of y prime as close as possible to the mean and the standard deviation of y. So I ask you for a predicted GPA, and you tell me 3.6. Well, that sounds like a GPA. You with me? The means and the standard deviations of the predicted score should match the criterion as much as possible. How do we do this? First, the value of B is chosen according to a mathematical formula to get the standard deviation of y prime as close as possible to the standard deviation of y. This works better or poorer depending upon the strength of the x-y linear relationship. We'll show you in the next slide. Okay? The stronger the relationship, the greater the standard deviation of y prime. X and y. Then, the value of A is chosen to make absolutely sure that y prime and y have the same mean. So your predicted scores will always have the same mean as your criterion. Where we run into problems is that the standard deviation of the predicted scores is almost always less than the standard deviation of the criterion. So here's a really, really strong correlation. This red bracket is capturing the range of the criterion, representing the standard deviation of y from the largest score on y to the smallest score on y. When there's a really strong prediction, the range of y prime scores, that is the range of the part of the line that overlaps the y values, is almost as big. And we're going to do a great job predicting. If people have high scores, they're going to have very high predicted scores. If they have low scores, they're going to have low predicted scores. This is going to work great. Watch what happens when we go to a more modest correlation. Again, the red bracket captures the standard deviation of y. The yellow bracket captures the standard deviation of y prime. Notice it's less. We're simply not going to get high scores correct because the biggest y prime that we have isn't as large as the biggest y. And it's in a different place. This is the biggest y prime. This is the biggest y. Oops. Also, the lowest scores are not going to be correctly predicted because we just can't generate a y prime low enough to match the lowest Y scores. And if we did, they'd be in the wrong place. These are the lowest Y's, those are the lowest Y prime. So what this formula is going to do is make absolutely certain that the mean of Y prime matches the mean of Y, and it's going to do the best job that it can of matching their standard deviations. What this also means is that the scale of Y prime, the range, is going to be as close as possible to the scale of Y. And this is important for the utility, and it's also important when we think about selecting the proper regression model. If we're working with GRE and GPA, there are two possible regression models. Using GPA to predict GRE, using GRE to predict GPA. I gotta check something real quick. Yeah. Now the point is that these formulas are not interchangeable. Let me remind you, the criterion is the variable that we want a value for but can't have. The predictor is the variable that we have a value for. Well, here's how this works. GRE scale, so on a very large scale, has a mean of 500 and a standard deviation of 100. Do you know why, by the way? Has anybody ever told you, the 941 kids have heard this, but anybody ever told you the story of linear transformations? Well, z-scores just work beautifully. I mean, you got this nice distribution, it matches the distribution of the parent data. You have this very nice thing that now we're expressing things not in terms of the arbitrary scale they were measured on, but standard deviations. And measurement people, and particularly education measurement people, think in terms of standard deviations. So if I tell you that you have a z-score of 2, that means you're 2 standard deviations above the mean, and that means there's about 2% people with higher scores than you. A lot of information in z-scores. The downer about z-scores from a practitioner's side is that roughly half of your people have a negative score. Negative scores are not popular. Even though they just mean below the mean as opposed to suck, they're still negative scores. And so somebody said, we need to change that. Voila, t-scores. Mean of 50, standard deviation of 10. All that you do is you take a z-score, multiply it by 10. Now that standard deviation of 1 is a standard deviation of 10. Add 50. Now that mean of 0 is a mean of 50. And if you have a negative t-score, you probably deserve it. I mean, you're 5 standard deviations below the mean. ETS came along and created the GRE. And they wanted everyone to understand that the GRE is more important than most of these other standardized tests that use a T-score. So we have a bigger scale. Your standardized Iowa tests are T-scaled, but the GRE, supersized. It's got a mean of 500, a standard deviation of 100. So if you have a 600, you're 1 standard deviation above the mean. That's what happens when you add up the two things that have a total possible score each of 800. Okay. But each scale. GPA, we'll pretend it has a mean near 2.5 and a standard deviation near 1. Now remember what this regression weight is going to do. This regression weight is going to take GPA, which has a standard deviation of 1, and it's going to change it into something that's a mimic of GRE, which has a standard deviation as close as possible to 100. That regression weight's going to be huge, right? Not because of the intense correlation between GPA and GRE, but just because we've got to change the scale from a standard deviation of 1 to a standard deviation of 100. Make sense? Flip it around. When we're using GRE as the predictor of GPA, now we've got to take this huge standard deviation of 100 and transform it down so that it mimics a standard deviation of 1. If you run these two formulas, this regression weight is huge. This regression weight is tiny. Does that mean that GPA is related to GRE, but GRE isn't related to GPA? No. Because the correlation between two variables doesn't depend on which one you call the predictor and which one you call the criterion. Right? We've all seen a correlation matrix, same number in the upper right-hand corner and the bottom left-hand corner. OK? Okay, the correlation between A and B is the same as the correlation between B and A. This is why. So obviously, we can't use these formulas interchangeably. We have to properly determine which variable is the criterion, which is the predictor, and obtain and use the proper formula. Make sure, when you're doing the homework, that you put Y in under dependent, and you put X in under independent in the SPSS windows. Now, one of the reasons that this is going to become very important is that we've got to remember that these regression weights have at least two influences. One, the relationship between the variables, and two, the scale difference between the variables. Otherwise, you may say stupid things like GPA is a great predictor of GRE because this is huge, and GRE is a lousy predictor of GPA because this is small. Okay? That's also why we have significance tests. The significance test takes into account not only the size of this, but the strength of the relationship between them. So big numbers could be significant or non-significantly different from zero, and little numbers can be significantly or non-significantly different from zero, based on the strength of the relationship between the variables, which is why we said you shouldn't do a linear regression unless you have a significant correlation. Make sense? Because no matter how big that B is, if it's non-significant, it's not reliably different from zero. And we know what happens when the regression weight is zero. When this is zero, everybody gets the same estimate.